Nordquist and Stavanger. Gilda Nordquist rode a commercial rocket to the moon. Sitting amidst the tourists and schoolchildren, who were on their way to Cellini, or the more adult attractions of the Hell Crater Entertainment Complex. The man seated beside her was an astronomer, heading for the Farside Observatory. He tried to engage Nordquist in conversation, but she quieted him soon enough with her flat monosyllabic responses. Men, she thought, always on the prowl. Commercial flights did not coast to the moon. That would take several days to reach their destination. Instead, they accelerated at less than half a G, half the gravitational force experienced on the Earth's surface, halfway to the moon, then reversed and slowed their approach so that they landed on the lunar surface in a matter of hours, not days. The passengers experienced zero gravity only for the few minutes of the turnaround. Still, Nordquist was dismayed that two of the children and several adults moaned and gagged while briefly weightless. At least no one upchucked, she thought gratefully, recalling the sickening smell of vomit from earlier flights to orbital zero-G facilities. The astronomer beside her took zero-G in stride. He must be a veteran traveler, she thought. To her surprise, Douglas Stavanger himself was waiting for her at the end of the flexible passageway that connected the spacecraft's hatch to the airlock of Cellini's Armstrong spaceport, smiling warmly, wearing a plain gray set of coveralls, much like most of the other permanent lunics. She walked carefully in the light lunar gravity, not wanting to stumble and make a fool of herself. Once she reached him, Stavanger extended his arm, and she took it gratefully. "You've never been to the moon before, have you?" he asked solicitously, it seemed to her. "This is my first time," she admitted. "You're doing fine." And he led her slowly into the terminal's main area. Stavanger was beginning to look his age, she thought. Even with his body teeming with nanomachines, there were crinkles in the corners of his eyes, and his once dark hair was peppered with gray. She saw that she was several centimeters taller than he, but he still was handsome and broad-shouldered. "It's so good of you to meet me personally," Nordquist said, actually feeling impressed. As they walked past the lines of other passengers filing through the immigration inspections, Stavanger smiled boyishly. "I don't have much of a staff," he explained. "I haven't been an official member of Cellini's government for ages." Nordquist picked up his slight emphasis on the word official. Stavanger had been Cellini's leader back in the early days, when the community was still known as Moonbase. He had led the short, sharp battle for independence against the old United Nations, a century before Nordquist had been born. For all that time, he had been the power behind the throne of Cellini. He had no official position. He merely was the man who made the effective decisions. "But you're a member of the World Council," she said to him. "That's quite an honor." He smiled at her. "Anita Halleck's rubber stamp," he said. The smile told her that he didn't mean for her to take the remark seriously. But still, she thought, he'd said it. They rode the tram through the tunnel that linked the spaceport to the mostly underground community of Cellini. Stavanger assumed, correctly, that Nordquist wasn't interested in the usual tourist attractions in the Grand Plaza. He knew she hadn't come to the moon for low-G acrobatics or flying like a bird on rented wings with nothing but her own muscle power. He took her directly to his home, a snug set of rooms nestled deep in Cellini's warren of tunnels. Stavanger ushered her into a smallish room furnished with comfortable chairs. Its walls were covered with smart screens that glowed softly. No desk, Nordquist noted. No signs of authority. He doesn't need to impress visitors. He's impressive on his own. Once they had settled into padded chairs facing each other, Stavanger got straight to the subject. "I assume your visit here has to do with Jordan Kell."
"You assume correctly," Nordquist responded. "He's slipped away from the security team that was guarding him."
Surprised, Stavanger blurted, "He did?"
"Yes. Apparently he spent last night with Professor Rudaki, but now he's gone."
"You don't know where he is?"
"No, we don't."
"Rudaki doesn't know where he's gone?
If he does, he's not admitting it."
Stavanger fought down the urge to smile. Anita's security people can't run roughshod over a council member the way they would over an ordinary citizen, he knew. "And Kell's wife?" he asked. Nordquist replied,
"She's safely in the council's communications complex. One of our research scientists is studying the communications device that's implanted in her brain.
Oh?
Her face taut, Nordquist explained. That's the device that allowed Kell to take over every broadcast station in the solar system.
Yes, Stavanger said, nearly smiling. Even our own system here in Selene carried Kell's little speech.
We'd like to know how they did that.
They? You mean Kell and his wife?
Yes.
And of course that device in her skull can send and receive messages faster than light.
Stavanger leaned back in his chair.
Anita must be very interested in that.
Indeed she is.
You know, he said, I was the one who got Anita active in public service ages ago. She's come a long way since then.
Nordquist started to reply, thought better of it, and merely nodded.
She's very ambitious, Stavanger said.
She has enormous responsibilities,
and no intention of stepping down as head of the World Council.
She's facing re-election next year.
She'll win easily.
Suddenly Stavanger's eyes narrowed.
Unless Kell runs against her.
Nordquist's jaw sagged open.
Run against her? He can't. He's a fugitive.
Has he been charged with a crime?
No, but he's escaped from protective custody. And Anita's trying to get him back, keep him bottled up, prevent him from talking to the public.
It's protective custody, Nordquist insisted. There are plenty of fanatics out there who'd try to kill him.
Or use him for their own purposes.
Nordquist sat up straight, stiff-backed.
Mr. Stavanger, I'm here to remind you that aiding a hunted fugitive is a breach of the law, even on the moon.
Strangely, Stavanger broke into a low chuckle.
We're not harboring Kell here in Selene. You can assure Anita of that.
Then he sobered and added,
although if he showed up here, I imagine our governing council would be tempted to grant him asylum.
You can't do that.
Selene is an independent nation, Ms. Nordquist. We make our own decisions.
You'd better not decide to harbor Kell or his wife.
Make certain that your governing council understands that.
What would Anita do if we did harbor him?
Nordquist hesitated, only a heartbeat before answering.
The first thing she'd do is cut off all commerce between Earth and Selene. That's the first step.
There would be more to follow, I assure you.
Stavanger muttered. Yes, I assume there would be.
Kell's not worth going to war.
Freedom is, said Stavanger.